What does possibility mean to you?
That's a hard question.
Something that you can strive for.
That I'm able to do anything I set my mind to.
You're confident in yourself and you believe in yourself. Stuff that you could achieve.
I feel excited. Anything is possible when you're more confident.
Shoes are a huge part of that. They are the most important part of my style.
You can express yourself in the right shoes.
Anything is possible.
DSW, countless shoes at bragworthy prices. Imagine the possibilities.
This is the Friends of History Debating Society. I'm John Batchelor. I welcome my colleague and friend, Thaddeus McCutter, American Greatness, to comment on a new article he has up at American Greatness, a product of the Journal of American Medical Association. The article has a very, very overwhelming title. I'll read it. Association of Habitual Checking Behaviors on Social Media with Longitudinal Functional Brain Development. That's the full title. If I understand what Thaddeus is writing about is that young people especially are unduly influenced, especially young people who check 15 times or more on their social media sites. They're unduly influenced about people's opinions of them. They become extremely sensitive to social thought, social attitude, social nuance. In other words, they're being trained in some fashion to make them extremely vulnerable, if I understand correctly. 15 times is what the JAMA network points to. That is, how does this match up to what we understand of what going on now with younger people, social media, and politics? Good evening to you.
Good evening to you, John. Well, what we're seeing is that at the stage of adolescent development where the brain is continuing to grow and to have patterns ingrained that will last a lifetime, people are becoming what the article and I think what the studies have called, quote, hypersocial. What that means is that kids say they check their phone to see if their posts have been liked by their peers over 15 times a day, as you referenced. They are at the risk of becoming hypersocial. In short, politically, they become very concerned about peer pressure. They become very concerned about what the collective thinks of them. And this is very dangerous for a self-governing society, for a country that values initiative, or values independent thought. It's something that has to be taken into account, especially by parents when they look at their children's social media use.
My observation, having read your piece and having looked at this article at JAMA, is that this is a new phenomenon they're tracking. I don't remember this being part of the conversation about the genius of the internet in the earlier part of this century, nor do I remember anybody speaking about it generally. They're concerned with lobbying. They're concerned with disinformation or misinformation. They're concerned with how certain sites, TikTok is often mentioned, are influencing people, yes, but they're also tracking them or giving them information that might be useful to bad actors later. So what you're talking about is not just this persuasion or this espionage or this abuse of people. You're talking about the children themselves are becoming unduly dependent upon the opinion from the ether, some mechanical version of them.
It's peer pressure put on steroids is the way to look at it. When you're growing up, getting bullied, or if you're getting many people in your social group haranguing you, it has negative effects. So what they've done now is they've made it much easier, not only for the validation, which many teenagers and others crave, but also for the, quote, invalidation. When you get the harassment, when you get the negative response to something you post or something you say or a picture you put online, it becomes, especially for those, again, who check it constantly, almost on a continual basis, 15 times or more a day, it becomes ingrained in the way the brain functions and the way that they process it. So it's not just a short-term fix. They are literally becoming addicted to likes, addicted to external validation, and that will continue with them throughout the rest of their lives. And that's very dangerous, again, especially in a nation that values independence, that values independent thought, that values self-government, governance. It's unfortunate, especially for the kids. I mean, it's very crippling, one would think.
You point to study finds. That's all one term. This is from 2018, before the pandemic. It's not your smartphone you're addicted to. It's the social interaction. So the device itself, the website itself, is not profound. It's the need for what? Conversation? For linkage?
Well, that's step one. The step one is the linking with the network, with the external network. That's obviously people are social creatures. It makes sense, especially as we continue to see the shrinking of actual physical relationships within society, organizations, community-based organizations. What you continue to find are the growth of virtual networks where people plug in and find each other, sometimes for positive results and sometimes for negative behaviors and negative actions, including criminal actions. Be that as it may, once you found the network, then what we're talking about now in the present, this latest article is about the fact, especially for young people, it is how you respond to the influences of that network, that you're looking for validation and that you're very susceptible to criticism from that virtual network. And so it hardwires them to want to be approved of, to get approbation by the network, both the physical one that is diminishing and the external one, which is continuing to grow and will continue to grow as AI continues to figure out how to micromanage and how to algorithmically target users of social media. So this is a problem that is going to continue. It shows no sign of abating and every sign of accelerating.
What did the pandemic teach us about this craving for social validation?
I would think that in the past you would have seen young people, especially teenagers and others, that would be chafing, that would be the most resistant of the type of stultifying conformity that was enforced upon society with the lockdowns. But instead, especially with the growth of the social network and the ability for the message, the narrative of the state to come forward, they were far more amenable and far more pliable to the lockdown than you could have ever imagined. Let's say the 1960s baby boomer generation having been to being locked down. So they were very cognizant and very responsive to the arguments that they're a good person if they just allow themselves to be locked down and stop living their lives. That by stopping living their lives, they were saving lives, and the other such sorts of narratives that have since been disproven by the facts of the pandemic. But the point remains is that the very people, the youth that you would expect to be the most resistant to that type of repressive lockdown, were actually some of the most pliable.
Here we are in post-pandemic, we believe, and we're into an election cycle. And one of the questions raised in this election cycle is, will the young people vote in great numbers as they did in 2020? Does this change any expectation of voters?
I think it makes it easier for them to view peer pressure to vote, which is fine. I want everybody to vote. But I think it makes it harder for them to have independent thought or to differ from the mindset of the collective, the leftist narrative that is being forced through the media and everywhere they could possibly do it, to say, wait a minute, this might not be the best thing for me. It might not be the best thing for my situation. So it makes it harder for them because the validation of their virtual network will be hard-grained. And if they try to dissent from it, it will be very difficult for them to do so. It makes it easier for them to become inured to the collective, to inure to groupthink, and to actually embrace it for psychological reasons. And part of that psychological reason is the physical response that the brain has over time responding to this type of external validation. It's very dangerous. It's very dangerous because it basically is the facilitation of the collective and groupthink which we certainly oppose if you believe in critical thinking and independence of thought.
Your observation then, is there a remedy for this? What you're talking about seems already in place. Self-satisfied. People check for social media 15 times a day, and they carry on with their lives. I don't see anybody challenging it.
Well, some do. A lot of people don't. I think that a lot of people tend to outgrow the social media, especially as they get older, as their life continues. As you get more busy with the day-to-day thing, the diurnal behaviors that people engage in, work, family, so forth. That's why the adolescents are the most at risk, because they're the ones with time on their hands, a lot of them. So I think that the easiest way is to find some other pursuit. I would say that one of the most important things you can find is the actual physical social network that you can engage in and see people on a daily basis as people, have real life experiences, not virtual ones. And I think that those are the ways to do it. And I think parents have a responsibility to make sure their kids get off the phone and start living real life. So those are the types of things. I don't think it's predestined. I think also we have to look at big tech to make sure that big tech isn't targeting things, how the uses of algorithms aren't being unfairly targeted to kids and unfairly attuned to hooking them and making them addicted to likes, making them addicted to their social network, which is something that I think is not beyond the realm of Congress to actually delve into on a bipartisan basis.
That is McCarter writing in American Greatness. He's also a recovering politician, but right now he's writing about something I was unaware of. 15 times a day is the opinion of the Journal of American Medical Association. And for those of you with teenagers, that's a conversation. This is the Friends of History Debating Society. I'm John Batchelor.
You're great at protecting your own personal information. You probably even use things like two-factor authentication, strong passwords, and a VPN. But as much as you try to be in control of how your information is protected, there are lots of places that also have it, and they might not be as careful as you are. That's why LifeLock monitors millions of data points every second for identity threats. If your identity is stolen, a LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will help solve identity theft issues on your behalf, guaranteed or your money back. Plus, all LifeLock plans are backed by the $1 Million Protection Package, meaning LifeLock will reimburse you up to the limits of your plan if you lose money due to identity theft. You might not be able to control how others handle your personal information, but you can help protect it with LifeLock. Save up to 40% your first year. Call 1-800-LIFELOCK and use promo code IHEART or go to LifeLock.com/iHeart for 40% off. Terms apply.